Hello and welcome to the Vet Blast podcast. I am your host, Dr. Adam Christman, Chief Veterinary Officer here at Fetch DVM 360.
Hey, welcome back to the Vet Blast podcast. I'm really excited about this because I completely need a refresher on blood transfusion. So who's your type in transfusion medicine? And joining us is the one and only Lexi Hansen. How are you, my friend?
I'm doing well. How are you?
Good. Thank you. I'm ready. I got my pen. I'm ready to take notes because it's been a minute since I've heard the updates about this. So to our listeners tuning in, Lexi Hansen is an LVT, RVT, VTS, and ECC, and she started her career in the veterinary industry at Morrisville State College, where she received her bachelor's in equine sports medicine and rehabilitation. She then went on to attend SUNY Delhi to obtain her associate's in veterinary technology. After becoming an LVT in New York in 2016, she moved to Charlotte, North Carolina, and obtained her RVT while pursuing her dream of working in emergency medicine. In 2020, she relocated to the Raleigh-Durham area to join the Emergency Critical Care Department at Blue Pearl in Cary, North Carolina. Working alongside three criticalists, she was able to retain her VTS and ECC in 2021. Over the last year, she has transitioned into a leadership role as the Emergency and Critical Care Technician Manager, which is quite a feat right there. That's such a great accomplishment. And she works closely with her in-house technician trainer to ensure her and her team are always practicing the best standards of medicine. When she's not busy, she's spending time with her boyfriend, her pit bull, baking, and gardening. So it's good to hear that you try to decompress a little bit, because that's a lot of work you're doing there.
Yes, definitely important to find those things outside of work that really kind of speak to you and can refill your cup a little bit.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, so I'm ready to learn. So let's kind of go into the basics first. So what are the main blood components you most commonly use in practice?
So especially in emergency practice, the main blood components that you're going to use for your patients are often whole blood, if you're lucky enough to have a whole blood donor program, a lot of packed red blood cells, which often get shipped to you, fresh frozen plasma, and then frozen plasma if you thawed out your plasma and didn't need to use it and are putting it back in the freezer. There are less common components that we use, often more in emergency medicine or in academia, where you're going to use things like cryoprecipitant, IVIG, albumin, maybe some lyophilized platelets. But the main things you're going to see in a normal practice would be your main blood components and your main plasma components.
Okay. So we have that. And then what about like cryoprecipitate and lyophilized platelets and those kinds of things?
Yeah, those are actually really awesome. And so we do use lyophilized platelets. I've only used them a handful of times, but they're really exciting for some of your patients who are suffering. Often you think maybe your ITP patients or things like that. The cryoprecipitate is, I've never had the chance to use it, but it is amazing. And in academia, you're going to be more likely to use it. But what they do is they thaw out your general fresh frozen plasma, and they make it almost like a little slushy consistency, still a few ice crystals in there, and then they centrifuge it down, and they will, a kind of a white precipitant will appear within that thawed plasma, and then the majority of that thawed plasma is removed, and then you can refreeze it and store it, and they have individual blood banks will kind of confirm what is the true definition of their cryoprecipitate. So if you're getting from different blood banks, ask them, you know, what exactly is in there. But your cryoprecipitate, they do not have the von Willebrand factor, so don't use it for your Dobies or things like that. But they do have factor 8 and fibrinogen.
Were they ever, you don't use oxyglobin anymore, right?
I haven't. I learned about it in tech school, but I have not used it in practice.
Yeah. I don't think it's been used as much. So interesting. Okay. Yeah. So we got that. So then let's first talk about like the feline blood type. So what are the feline blood types?
So the feline blood types are AB and then AB. And as we all know, cats do not follow any of the rules. So cats actually have alloantibodies. And so they already have pre-existing antibodies against red blood cells that are a different blood type than theirs. And that's different from dogs, of course, because cats like to be a little bit special. And so it's really particular that if you have a type A cat, they get A blood. If you have a type B cat, they get B blood. I have never seen an AB type cat. However, if you had one of those come in, it's a very rare phenotype. It's honestly not 100% fully understood. But if you did have them come into your clinic and they needed a transfusion, you would transfuse them with type A blood that has no anti-B antibodies. And so a packed red blood cell with as little plasma as possible, even considering washing your packed red blood cells again, and then monitoring for a transfusion reaction.
Okay. And to the listeners, what do you mean when you're saying washing?
So what you do is you would actually use as you're for cross matching and like typing, you would wash. So use saline, centrifuge your red blood cells, and then kind of pour that precipitate off. And you would do that a few times, and that's going to take out any of the extra plasma that could potentially cause a reaction. When you still would want to monitor for it, but it would try to prevent it as much as we possibly can.
Okay, got it. All right, so let's talk about the canine blood types.
So canine blood types, they're unique, very different from cats. And so they have a bunch of different types of blood all within one. The main that we look for within our donor dogs is DEA 1, 3, 4, 5, and 7. And then each of those types, so DEA stands for dog erythrocyte antigen. And each of those is a two allele system. And so you can have DEA1 positive and negative, DEA3 positive and negative, and the like for all of the following. The main one, kind of the most significant one in clinic, because it's extremely antigenic, would be your DEA1 blood type. And so often if you have a patient that needs to be like a recipient for blood, you would test them for DEA1 to see if they were positive or negative.
Okay, got it. And so I'm sure there's got to be a lot of pre-transfusion testing, because I hear it often too, which is interesting. A lot of pet parents want to get their dogs and cats involved. So what's involved with the pre-transfusion testing?
So your donor pets that are coming in for pre-transfusion or for a transfusion, what you would do is we would first type them. And so we would want to see, for the dog, are they DEA1 positive or negative? And if a cat, are they A or B? And then what we'll do is we can do a cross match. And so there are two types of cross matches. And this is to see how reactive that donor blood will be to that recipient. And okay. So a minor cross match, which is less common, is determining the compatibility of donor plasma and recipient red blood cells. But the one that we commonly see, they come in, you know, pre-packaged cross-matching tests, is the major cross-match. And that determines the compatibility between that donor's red blood cells and that recipient's plasma. And they often do that because more often than not, we are giving the red blood cells, the packed red blood cells, to those patients. And it tries to help to prevent incompatible transfusions that could potentially cause an immune-mediated hemolytic, so like an anaphylactic reaction is what we're trying to avoid.
Okay. Oh, yeah. That's got to be a big one, the anaphylaxis. Absolutely.
Yes.
All right. So we talked about the pre-transfusion. So what's important to know when setting up and administering a transfusion?
The one thing that I preach as I'm teaching all of my nurses is aseptic technique. Blood wants to grow bacteria. It is the perfect medium for it. So one, use aseptic technique, wear your gloves, make sure your workstation is clean, and knowing two, what filter you're going to use. So are you have a large volume of blood that you're going to give and you're going to use an inline filter? There's smaller filters. So the Cytoflows, there's the Hemonate filters, which you would use for maybe a feline transfusion where you're not giving quite as much blood. And then knowing what pumps you can and can't use. Any pumps that will clamp that line, you don't want to use because they are going to traumatize your red blood cells, and it defeats the purpose if you have lysed them before they get to the patient.
Okay. Got it. And this is so fascinating. Okay. So we have that. We have to monitor the different types of transfusion. They're using aseptic techniques. So what about like monitoring during a transfusion? What do some of those reactions look like, and what are the technicians doing during the transfusion?
Yeah, absolutely. So you want to monitor your patient the entire time. Often, if you are going to get that really big anaphylactic type reaction, it's going to happen in generally the first 15 minutes. Kind of doctor dependent. I find more so less doctors pre-medicating with diphenhydramine or steroids, unless it's something that the patient is already receiving for whatever disease process they have going on. But you want to monitor your temperature, your heart rate. We do monitor mucous membranes. It can take a little bit longer for those to become pink again. Their respiratory rate, their respiratory effort, kind of their mentation. Also being very cautious to make sure that your IV catheter is patent. And if we are concerned, sometimes we'll throw an ECG on them, which can be really satisfying when you have a patient who maybe is really anemic and they're really tachycardic, and halfway through this transfusion, now that you've given them a little bit of that volume back, their heart, watching their heart rate kind of come down. And so they generally monitor those every 15 minutes for the first hour, and then every 30 minutes, as long as the patient is tolerating it well. And then what you're looking for, there's immunologic transfusion reactions and non-immunologic. So the main immunologic ones you'll see is a febrile non-hemolytic. And so this is often an increased temperature. We see that really often with transfusions. And generally, you'll either slow the transfusion or stop it, depending on how febrile they are and kind of what the doctor is wanting. You can have your acute hemolytic. And so this is where they're going to get tachycardic. They're going to be restless. They might develop a fever pretty quickly. And so this is where you're going to stop that transfusion. You're going to fluid resuscitate them. And this is when you're going to reach for your steroids, your diphenhydramine, potentially even your epinephrine. And so those are the ones we're trying to avoid. There are allergic reactions to blood. And so immunoglobulin E-mediated immunologic reactions. And so again, slowing or stopping the transfusion, your steroids, diphenhydramine, and then the delayed hemolytic. So these are, you think of your IMHA patients who you give that blood and, you know, they're kind of chomping through it. And so this is usually no clinical signs. You're just, their PCV is not continually going up. You'll give them transfusion and they'll trend back down and vice versa.
Okay.
The non-immunologic ones would be non-immunologic hemolysis. And so this is due to, like, they're going to be tachycardic, tachypneic, restless again. You're going to want to stop that transfusion and kind of see what's going on. You also have to worry about circulatory overload for some of your patients who may have cardiac disease, kidney insufficiency, or really chronic anemia, that you're overloading them with this large volume. And they can, so monitoring for kind of orthopnea, dyspnea, tachypnea, things like that. You potentially have to stop those transfusions and even potentially reach for your Lasix at that point. Hypocalcemia, you can see if you do large volume transfusions. So it's from the citrate, that overload from kind of what is keeping that blood from clotting. And then the big one would be sepsis. So bacterial contamination of blood products. They're stored improperly. You're not using your aseptic technique, and you can, in a way, give your patient sepsis.
Right. Can I just stop for a second and just give a huge shout out to the veterinary technicians out there? Because when my dog needed a blood transfusion, I just want to share this story, is that You know, here I am as a veterinarian, but also as a dog dad. I'm really not, you know, concerned thinking about the transfusion, but having those two technicians that were there, I can't begin to tell you, Lexi, they were on it to the second where there was any sort of reaction. And so to all you technicians and technician students out there, thank you so much, because this is such a huge field. I can tell you from talking on social media to pet parents, it's a very, very popular interest to pet owners. So, and everything that you just talked about, I'm thinking to my head, how in the world do you manage all of these things? And this is just like one transfusion that you're doing in ECC probably several times a day, right?
Yeah, we often will have three or four transfusions going at a time. And so teaching, really big teaching, what to look for, how to manage that. And two, knowing your limits, knowing, hey, we've got to pull another nurse in here because I really need another nurse watching, having eyes on this. Right. And advocating for your patients, because that's what the technicians are there for.
100%, 100%. So going back to the pet parents, Lexi, what qualifies a dog or cat to be a good blood donor?
Yes, I am actually a donor dog mom. Yes. He's been donating since he was 1 year old. And so some of the main requirements are age and weight related. And so for your dogs, you generally want them over 50 pounds. For your cats, you're looking around 10 pounds. And that's kind of like a healthy 10 pounds, not a chunky 10 pounds. Usually can start around a year of age. And we do really intense testing to make sure that we are not inevitably giving a donor patient any sort of disease. And so we do general blood work to make sure that that donor patient is healthy themselves. We do a lot of like tick-borne, blood-borne disease testing, making sure that they remain on preventatives all year round. And then his name's Riker Avery. When I bring Riker in to donate, we will check his PCV and make sure that he's at an appropriate level that he can donate. They donate blood based off of their body weight. And so making sure that you are keeping them a good weight, not taking too much blood from them, and then allowing them, I generally say about 8 weeks in between donations. We often will give them fluid resuscitation, so some sub-Q fluids. Riker tends to get a little nauseous sometimes, so we'll give him some Serenia. I actually manage the blood donor program at my current location, and most of the pets love it. They get a big snack after. That's the only time he really gets wet food. He's going to be 5 this year, and he goes in and he sits there and he doesn't need any touch of sedation or anything. And then he gets his big treat after.
I love that. Yeah. I love that, because there are a lot of perks to, I mean, not only to just feeling so good about what you're doing, but there are a lot of perks to the practice as a client, right? If you have a blood donor dog.
Yeah, absolutely. Right now, our program is mainly our associate pets. And so hopes to reach out into the community eventually, because a lot of owners don't know until their dog is in need of a transfusion that we collect blood from patients and give it to other patients, and to see kind of their reaction to we do this is really exciting. And we'll have little shout outs in our lobby of like, I saved a life, things yes. like that. So
yeah. I mean, if any of you are tuning in and listening, if you have been or on either end of that line of receiving blood or providing blood as a blood donor for your dog and cat, thank you so much. I know you can always use it. I hear sometimes I'll see posts that there's a shortage every now and then, because it happens. You guys get so busy with what's going on. So we need to keep these programs visible and aware and provide the education to, you know, the community that surrounds you to know that that's around. So that's wonderful.
Yeah.
I want to ask you, what do you love most specifically about blood donation? What do you love most about doing what you're doing with this?
I find that you get a real sense of being able to give back, because often, you know, I'm an ECC nurse in the ICU and feeling like maybe I don't have control over what's happening with this patient, and I'm doing everything that I know how, giving them all the care they need. But I feel like to give something tangible, like here is a bag of blood from my own dog, and it's going to save your dog is so exciting.
So exciting, so rewarding, and again, so needed as well. So is there information on websites or anything that's available on blood donations and transfusion?
Yeah, so American Blood Bank has one, and Blue Pearl actually is having blood banking locations. And so hopefully, maybe in the future, we'll be able to have one here in North Carolina, but working towards any of those websites of how you could get your pet involved, how you can get involved, you know, because we do often run into blood shortages, and kind of trying to scramble around and find blood can be a little bit scary for those on the end of knowing how important it is to get it.
Absolutely. Very scary. So it's a lot of great information to kind of put everybody's mind at ease. So where can we learn more about Blue Pearl?
You can go to any of the Blue Pearl pages. They have their careers page. Blue Pearl Blood Banking is on there. They are also, have all of the different things. They have some emergency clinics, emergency and specialty clinics. I work at personally an emergency and specialty clinic, and I love working with specialists as well. While I don't, love the medicine patients quite so much, it's nice to have that pair to kind of have somebody to talk through with. Really working together on these patients makes a huge difference.
It really does. It really does. Well, Lexi, thank you so much for all the great work you and your team are doing there. We need you.
Yes, thank you so much.
You're welcome. Thank you for being on the show. And to our listeners, if you are going to be heading to any of the Fetch conferences, you'll probably see Lexi giving some lectures with us. So we're looking forward to having her provide her expertise with us.
Yes, I'm so excited. Thank you so much.
Absolutely. And thank you to our listeners for tuning in. Again, a special thank you to all those dogs who have donated and cats blood or have been on both ends of that. Thank you for all the great work that we do in this profession. And thank you for tuning in, everybody. Don't forget to rate this podcast. It helps us out significantly. And we'll see you next time right here on the Vet Blast podcast. Take care, everybody.
Thank you for listening to the Vet Blast podcast with me, Dr. Adam Christman. Tune in next time. Remember, take care of your animals and always stay possum.